Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3. The game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Friday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. As we do every Friday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our good friend Jared Stillman to the program. Which, by the way, Jared Stillman, fresh off two consecutive victories in the Jared versus Joe competition. Jared, good morning. How are you?
Thank you so much, Robbie, for that introduction. That is so very kind of you. I am doing well this morning. How are you?
We're awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Let's get started on this Mike Vrabel conversation that Charles Robinson brought up. We asked him about yesterday on the show. Also, heard your show yesterday talking about it as well. So, first off, if you're the Titans and this situation ever presented itself, what would it take absolutely for you to consider trading Mike Vrabel to another team? And do you think there's any reality where this is the case for the Titans as they move forward here?
I think it's got like a 10% chance, 8% chance of happening. So not really. No, do I think that this is going to happen? Probably not. But, I mean, I stand by my, you know, a first and a third would be pretty good for Vrabel. And then Charles comes on and is like, first and a third? You probably get two first-round picks. And so I hear that, and I'm like, two first-round picks? If I own the Titans, and somebody said, Mr. Stillman, the Chargers are on line one. They're offering two first-round picks for Mike Vrabel. I would make that trade so fast. I mean, I would put Vrabel in the car and drive him to Los Angeles myself. Like, I don't understand how people think that the coach is worth more than A.J. Brown was worth in a trade. Not that the A.J. Brown trade was a good trade, but still, I mean, to me, I'm looking at this and I'm like, you know what, two first-round picks and I can hire an offensive coach, which is where I think the game is trending with a young quarterback.
I mean, the game's trending toward offense? Wow, you're really on the cutting edge there, Jared.
Well, Cowherd had a take yesterday that the game's actually trending towards defense.
This year it kind of is.
And I thought that that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Defenses are winning right now, buddy.
I mean, it really looks that way. Who's good? Kansas City's good. Buffalo's good. San Francisco's good. Philadelphia's good. Detroit's good. The teams with offenses seem to be pretty good.
Yeah. Now, offense is important, too. You know what's also important, Jared, is coaching. You don't think – or maybe you don't think so. Is that the theme of the Jared visit? Coaching really doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, right, if coaching is so important and Vrabel's coaching is so good, why have you won two out of your last 11 or whatever it is?
Yeah, players are important too. I would put talent over coaching, but man.
Also, when it comes to the idea of trading Vrabel, there's almost this assumption that the Titans couldn't go get another good coach.
Okay, no one has said that. I don't know. Have you said that, Robbie?
No. Well, no, but your implication that coaching's so important, Jared, why would I trade Vrabel? It's like, you know, saying that I can't just go get another good coach.
Well, I mean, words in my mouth.
You can. Now, they've also
– I said it was the implication.
We've seen the franchise also go find coaches that are not very good as well. So,
look,
I mean,
hey, that was my thing with the Mike Mularkey thing was when they fired Mike Mularkey and we didn't know if Vrabel was
correct.
A good coach or was going to – I was like, hey, man, like, I mean, this team hasn't been to the playoffs in 10 years.
Right.
And they haven't won a playoff game in 13 and you just fired the coach?
Right.
So, I mean, I don't necessarily –
do you look back and think that's a good move now?
What, the firing Mularkey?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess right now, I guess I'm, you know, yeah, I mean, Vrabel's done a decent job as coach, but I also think that it's kind of, I think Vrabel's overrated. Like, the way Charles talks about Vrabel, which is the national narrative around Vrabel, as if he's, like, completely blameless for what's going on around here, or he is infallible as a coach, is ridiculous.
So now you're putting words in Charles' mouth. He didn't say that.
No, but he did say that
people
would be lining up to hire Vrabel immediately.
I mean, he's sitting there saying, like, yeah, that would be so dumb to fire Vrabel or to trade Vrabel. Oh, my God. I mean, Vrabel, everybody would line up to hire Vrabel. Vrabel! And it's like, yes, but see, that's what the people outside of here that don't, you know, have to deal with Craig Aukerman or the 2 years of Todd Downing, the stubbornness, you know, they don't see that stuff. They don't look at Andre Dillard and think, that was Mike Vrabel's guy. Mike Vrabel brought in Andre Dillard. Aaron Brewer, a 270-pound center. That's Mike Vrabel's guy. He gave him $4.3 million.
But see, now we're talking about different things.
Now, but you can't take that away from him, Joe.
No. But Mike Vrabel, the personnel evaluator, may be bad.
But you can't take that away.
Right, but what I'm saying is when we're talking about Vrabel and how the league views him as a coach, you're now getting into things that I don't think would affect that. You know
but
what
I'm
mean?
Telling you that the league thinks that Vrabel and like the national narrative thinks that Vrabel is a great evaluator of talent because they saw him throw a pissy fit when A.J. Brown got traded. So it was all Vrabel didn't have anything to do with that.
Okay. I don't even know. Okay. I don't know.
I'm telling you right now.
You are
two Vrabel, things here.
You are on record as a Vrabel hater. You are a Vrader. You are the lead Vrader now, which is cool.
Two things right here.
Number one. Own it.
You cannot take away the personnel thing from Vrabel at this point. You can't.
I agree.
Yeah, so that's gone. So even if Vrabel is an excellent coach and he's bad at personnel, the toothpaste is out of the tube, so you can't go back on that. So that's a problem you've already caused for yourself, which I think, quite frankly, and I don't, this would be putting words in your mouth if this is not true. I think the three of us all agree that we'd rather Vrabel just stay the coach and that they, you know, just leave a GM in charge of personnel, right?
Yeah, I mean,
in a perfect world, yes, I would prefer that.
I think it's better to have it that way. I mean, you also want your coach to have a lot of say in personnel, and I think he did. That's the thing.
Yeah, no. I mean, I've talked to people that were a part of the previous administration that told me, like, no, the idea that we didn't collaborate with the coaches is...
I mean, if you did that as a GM in this league, it would be ridiculous.
Yes.
Right.
How could you possibly do that?
So you can't go back on that with, you know, as far as personnel is concerned. And so now that is a part of the equation when evaluating Vrabel. And then I think the second thing is, I think Vrabel's a solid coach, but I don't think that Vrabel's as good of a coach as everybody else thinks. I think his value on the market is probably better than his ability as a coach. I have done a complete 180 in terms of my feeling about offensive guru head coaches. And at the same time, you know, the third part of this, I guess, is that I do wonder if, you know, like LaViolette around here, he's a really, really good coach who after a while, it doesn't work anymore. And I think that, again, I don't want to put words in your mouths. You guys covered both of them, that there are probably a lot of similar qualities between Vrabel and LaViolette.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Let's get to the other thing that I think could be staring the Titans directly in the face when they get back from the bye week, and that is the quarterback part of this. Tannehill's got the high ankle sprain. I'd be shocked if he plays against Atlanta based on what that timeline looks like. You've talked about the Levis part of this, the offensive line, and the concerns that you have with not only the line, but just the talent around Levis right now of not being up to par and not setting him up to succeed, which I think is a fair thing to bring up. My question, I guess, is what's the balance if you're the Titans making this decision between everything that you've laid out, which I think is fair, but also watching Malik Willis play football and knowing that it's just not going to happen. Like, it's not it with Malik Willis. How do you balance that and reconcile that if you're the Titans having to figure out who your starter is against Atlanta?
So I said this when they drafted Will Levis. No matter what the Titans' opinion of why they drafted Will Levis is, which is still hard for me to totally fathom, because if he's the quarterback of the future, he's your franchise guy. I don't know why you would take a guard with the 11th overall pick before taking your franchise quarterback. But Will Levis is their franchise quarterback, regardless of whether or not they want to admit that. And so at that point in time, so as of April 30th or whatever the day was that the Titans drafted Will Levis, the single most important thing as far as the franchise is concerned at this moment in time is what is in the best interest of the development of Will Levis. That, I think, is, you know, more important than making the playoffs this year, because, again, I think we all know even if they do make the playoffs, they're not going to win the Super Bowl. So what is in the best interest of developing Levis? If that means at the end of the year you see Levis in practices and everything else and you think he's ready to play and he needs game reps and you don't think you're going to ruin him, then you have to put him out there. You know, the Ravens did something similar when they decided, you know what, that's enough of Joe Flacco. Lamar's ready. Let's put him out there. Pittsburgh did the same thing last year with Kenny Pickett. They thought he was ready. They put him out there. So I think if you get to that point with Levis, you do that. Vrabel admitted the other day on a very good question from Joe about the missed preseason reps around Will Levis. Vrabel said that he didn't think Levis was ready to go into a game. And then he kind of couched it a little bit. I just don't understand how the Titans could put Levis in there and not affect his confidence in a negative way. I don't think that they can call plays that all of a sudden are going to get guys wide open and Levis is going to be able to deliver the football and they're going to be able to catch it and they're going to be able to block for him. Because if they had those special plays to be able to do that, I would think they'd be calling them for Tannehill. So I'm not sure that they really can do better. And Tannehill understands defenses in the NFL, which Levis doesn't, and he's getting killed back there. And so I just don't like the idea of setting him up to be the next David Carr or the next Tim Couch or the next young quarterback that goes out there and gets sacked 97 times.
So you think those two guys would have been good quarterbacks? Like that's just as simple as they just got ruined because they got hit so much early?
So I was talking to Corey Curtis about this. He covered the Texans the year that they drafted David Carr, and he said that there was something special with David Carr and that as soon as he had that first year where he got sacked a record 76 times – that he was like a scared puppy back there from that point on for the rest of his career.
This isn't quite that bad. I mean, it's not good, but it's not quite bad. I mean, you know, it's not that bad. And also, like, there's way more examples of quarterbacks who played through tough times early on bad teams who, you know, weren't ruined than were. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, because normally first-round quarterbacks don't work.
Well, exactly. But it's not because they're ruined by playing early.
So you just think that every quarterback who doesn't work stinks and that it wasn't a nurture element to it. Mahomes is great and it has nothing to do with the fact that Andy Reid is a great coach, brought him along slowly, and had Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill when he played.
Here's what I'll say about Patrick Mahomes. I think in all of these things, it's situation, it's scheme, coach, talent around you, protection, all of it. It all matters. But Patrick Mahomes, had Alex Smith been hurt a few weeks into that season and he had to come in and play early, we'd be watching the same Patrick Mahomes right now. That's what I believe.
So Rick Spielman, before the draft, ranked like his prospects as what they were coming out, not you know what they've become or anything like that, in terms of their actual talent. And you can argue whether or not you think Spielman was a good general manager in Minnesota or not. That's for you to do, not for me. But I, you know, as somebody who's worked with a former general manager I thought was pretty good, I know just how much more they know than I do. And Spielman ranked them, and he actually had Will Levis ahead of both Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes as quarterback prospects coming out. And his point was that there were some serious flaws with Patrick Mahomes' game, and Andy Reid did an excellent job to fix those flaws. And obviously, there were a lot of holes with Josh Allen, and Brian Daboll did a good job bringing him along slowly. And so, I think that, like, to me, that underscores...
But he did play.
Yes. But, again, like, he...
For a bad team.
They were bad because he was the quarterback, and they were bringing him along slowly. They had a great defense, and they had made the playoffs the year before. But that's a different discussion. But my point is that I do believe that in the NFL, you can ruin a quarterback, and the stupid teams are normally the teams that ruin the quarterbacks the most, just like how Charles came on yesterday and said that the Jets regret internally playing Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson's got talent. I mean, Zach Wilson stinks, but Zach Wilson has talent. So why does Zach Wilson stink? Because they threw him out there when they didn't have a team around him.
They threw him out there so he can go kick the Titans' butt.
I hear everything that you're saying. I really do. Like, I hear everything that you're saying. I still come back to the, like, the balance of, like, the other option right now is Malik Willis. And I just can't get over that.
You're trying to win football games.
Right. Malik sucks. But that's why I'm saying, like, if you were to say to me, hey, Jared, you know, your house is riding on the Atlanta game. Who should play quarterback? Will Levis should play quarterback. If you're saying, Jared, the most important thing that for the franchise is the development of Will Levis, and I'm afraid that he's not ready for this game and that this could set him back developmentally, then I would begrudgingly play Willis. That is a totally different discussion because it's not just all about the Atlanta game for me. It's about what's in the best interest of Levis long term. And I use the example of Vince Young here because I believe, you know, every time I used to ask Floyd about Vince Young, and I'd say, you know, what happened to Vince Young? Robbie, you remember Vince Young. I mean, Vince was crazy, but he was freaking talented and won a lot of football games. And he said every time I'd bring it up, he'd go, All I know is when I was GM, he was Rookie of the Year and he went to the Pro Bowl. And whatever happened after that, I have no idea. And I'm like, the subtitle to that is Jeff Fisher screwed him up. That, you know, Floyd's not saying it, but he's saying it.
Right.
And I just think that, you know, Vince Young's an example of, you know, a quarterback that was brought into the league and that the team, you know, switched around, you know, gave him a stupid coordinator and Norm Chow, which makes no sense, right? If you're going to draft Vince Young, why did you get the other guy's coordinator? But, you know, Norm Chow, he was terrible, and they didn't bring, you know, Vince wasn't ready, and then Jeff Fisher didn't put in an offense for him, and then he and Jeff Fisher got into it, and I mean, that's how you ruin some talented quarterbacks. Are some of these guys that are drafted in the first round, do some of them stink? Sure. Are some of them lemons? Absolutely. I would argue that all the hits Mariota took, the constantly changing coordinators on him, the changing offenses, I think that that played a role into why Mariota wasn't successful. And there's no point in drafting Levis and then just sending him out there to ruin him. And you've got a line and a receiving corps that I don't see the ability for Levis to overcome that.
We can go back and forth on this all day. Mariota, you know, got through all that fine, and we saw eventually what he was going to be. He just isn't accurate enough. He isn't good enough.
Then why was he good that second year?
Oh, he was good. He wasn't great. He wasn't perfect. He threw a terrible pick six at the Chargers. He had good games. He had bad games. We were trying to figure out where's the ceiling. Where's he going to land? And then, oh, there it is. That's what happened. So, like, that's big time revisionist history.
We thought he was great? A franchise quarterback.
Don't say we.
There's a lot of people.
Except
who think,
Robbie.
There's a lot of people who think a lot of people at a certain point are. And the idea that they're all ruined if they aren't is silly. But I look forward to when the Titans are finally ready for Will Levis to start a football game in year five. When they finally have the offensive line all perfect, all the conditions are perfect. Then
well, I mean, if they don't have a better offensive line next year, I don't care who the quarterback is, everybody here is getting fired. Like, if they go out
that's a good
into
way
free
to end
agency,
it. Right there, fire
if
everyone.
They go out into free agency and they go get another Andre Dillard and they triple Aaron Brewer's salary again, they're getting fired. And that there is no – at that point, it doesn't matter.
Jared, enjoy the weekend of no Titans football. Reset here before the Atlanta game, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
All righty. Jared Stillman, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Jared had to say. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie and Rex Road, presented by TJ Anderson, Homes of Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Got some Preds tickets to give away to see the Preds take on the San Jose Sharks tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Be caller number 3, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the San Jose Sharks tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena, 615-737-1025. Thanks to Jared Stillman for being with us
on the program. Thanks a ton.
By the way, Joe, we missed this a couple days ago, October 18th, the anniversary of the Titans' 59-0 loss to the Patriots in Foxborough in the snow game, which, by the way, October 18th, and it's snowing a foot in New England.
Yeah.
Sounds fun. Somebody just there's a screenshot that I just saw of the quarterback comparison as the game's approaching halftime. It's Kerry Collins, 1 of 8, 15 yards passing, an interception, quarterback rating of 0. Tom Brady, 18 of 19, 301 yards, 4 touchdowns, a rating of 158.3.
That's perfect. No, we could have had a
that
fun,
was a tough one.
That could have been a fun Titans Monday.
Oh man,
after that one. So Jarrett. To continue to argue against Jared without his voice being able to bark back at me, you know, first of all, I'm not completely dismissive of the idea of ruining a quarterback.
No.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe David Carr. Sure. I mean, I think in any sport you can ruin someone, by going too early. And we've talked about this. Barry Trotz talked about it with guys. You put a rookie or a young guy in these really tough matchups constantly, and it can hit the confidence. You know, the confidence is important, no doubt, in any sport. But I think absolutely I stand by what I said, which is that if you are good enough, for the most part, you're probably going to get through that. And Peyton Manning is a great example. And yes, I know he had some good players around him, but you know, Peyton Manning was awful as a rookie. They were awful in his rookie year. I mean, Matthew Stafford was, you know, in a terrible, terrible situation with the Lions. They were just dog doo-doo, you know, and he played through it. And there's also a difference with some of these, like when you're the number one overall pick, right, that there's a little bit more like expectation that you play. But, I mean, at this point, we're also, we are in late October. And so even though I know it's not game reps and reps, I think the one of the biggest points Charles made yesterday that I think should be part of this discussion is just – the fact that Will Levis would get the ones reps all week with the team, with the ones. He hasn't had that.
Yeah.
And I think there's value in that. If you invested in this guy being your quarterback of the future. We can talk hypotheticals all day about the Titans getting the number one pick. They're not going to get there. They're not going to be close to that. So, I mean, this is your guy. I do agree that, like, you internally, what's the word on him? Like, how do you feel his readiness is? How do you feel about the support system and how – much turbulence and adversity he could go through on the field, but also look, they're 2-4, and they are not Vrabel. Like him, hate him. There's people on text line supporting Jared's trade Vrabel for a bag of balls, you know. But Vrabel is trying to win, and so that really is right now to me the number one question is Willis Levis best chance to win.
Well, Levis gives there you go to me.
I mean, I would think so. And again, for the future of this investment in him, I would hope so. Yeah. And I know it's early, so there's a lot of information to be found out, but that's another value here. Even if it's not perfect and he's getting hit and he's got, there's a lot of bad things about this offense, there's still information about him you can find out. Like the Mariota example to me, I know you hate that example. It's ridiculous. Mariota got healthy again and he got back and he had a chance with the Falcons and he just. You know, he was still running around. He was still doing the things athletically that you can do, that he could always do. He just wasn't good enough. He is not good enough at delivering the football with accuracy and making quick decisions. And that's just – that's not because he got hurt in the game at Jacksonville in 2016.
No, like, look, I do – look, there are examples. Like, Vince Young is an interesting one. I mean, he's rookie of the year.
But how did Jeff Fisher ruin him?
Well, I think some of this is also on Vince, right? Yeah. Like, he didn't do the things he was supposed to do. But, I mean, his first 2 years, he looked pretty good. I mean, look, some of it's injury-related too, right? Like, I always wonder, like, if RG3 doesn't get his knee blown to crap, what does he look like? I don't know. I mean, it could have been very similar to Vince Young, where he looks great, wins Rookie of the Year, and then that's pretty much it from RG3 after that. I don't know. But I do think there have been quarterbacks as throughout the history of the NFL that – either via injury or via the situation they're in, did not grow into what they could have been just based on where they were. So it's an interesting discussion.
Yeah. And then, look, I've made the example way too many times. I'll do it again. Chuck Long would have been amazing, but he went to the Lions, and they got him killed, and he got hurt, and then that was it. Chuck Long, we'd still be talking about Chuck Long, and his NFL career had, like, the Broncos drafted him or something,
right.
You know? Well, that would have been Elway, but okay. How about the Eagles?
Sure.
Instead of Randall Cunningham, Chuck Long, all-pro quarterback. Didn't happen. Went to the Lions.
Well, the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode coming up at 7:45. Teron Davenport joining us at 8 o'clock, getting into the all things Tennessee Titans with him. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Kennington Smith, who covers Alabama for The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on the Alabama-Tennessee game tomorrow. This is Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Nick Keyser here with you on this Friday morning. Tennessee traveling to take on Alabama tomorrow in the third Saturday in October matchup. And to help us talk more about that, we welcome our friend Kennington Smith to the program on our 102.5 The Game's phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Covers the Alabama for The Athletic. Kennington, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, this is interesting. The game between these two teams last year at Kennington, it's just an up-and-down, back-and-forth matchup. Obviously, Bryce Young, Hendon Hooker, two of the best quarterbacks in the country. And so far, both offenses this year have been underwhelming, to say the least. What do you make of this matchup on paper, and what do you make of kind of the difference in style that we could see in tomorrow's game based on what we saw last year?
Yeah, I mean, even what we thought the offenses were going to be at the beginning of the year are so different than what both identities are right now. And when you have a game like this, I mean, styles make fights, and you have Tennessee, which is kind of like the ground and pound, and, you know, they're going to try to run the ball and be balanced on offense. And Alabama, I mean, their explosive plays in bunches, while maybe that's not sustainable, has gotten into 6-1 right now. I think the name of the game for both teams is trying to establish something in the short intermediate part of the field, whether that's running the ball or staying ahead of the chains with quick passes, and who's going to be able to neutralize the other team's pass rush the best. These are, you know, two of, if not the two best pass rushers in the SEC, two strong duos on both sides. And whoever's pass rush affects the quarterback the most is probably going to be the team that's best positioned to win. So that's kind of the name of the game for me. And I think what both teams want to focus on is staying ahead of the chains and keeping those pass rushers at bay.
Yeah, and with the Tennessee pass rushers, you know, going against that Alabama offensive line, which I think has been a disappointment. So in this platoon situation at left tackle, can you explain that to us? I mean, it just doesn't seem like a good idea, but obviously if neither guy is performing, I guess you go back and forth. Is that just going to continue, and what's that been like?
Yeah, I think it is going to continue, and it's been a bit of a seesaw. You have two freshmen, one true freshman, Caden Proctor, a redshirt freshman, and Elijah Pritchett. And Pritchett was the projected starter going into spring practice. Caden Proctor enrolls early, and they kind of battle it out through spring, through the fall. Caden Proctor ends up winning the job, but he's been, he's been struggling. I mean, he's a true freshman. He doesn't have any experience. Elijah Pritchett, even though he's a redshirt freshman, didn't play at all last year. So both of them are playing for the first time, and Proctor got the first chance. He was struggling. So they've just been progressively giving Pritchett more snaps the last 3-4 weeks, kind of culminated in him playing over 20 snaps last week. So, you know, there is a rotation right there. You can call it a competition, but both of them have had their struggles. Both of them have had their good moments. So I do expect this to continue, but Caden Proctor is the one that's going to, you know, get the majority of the reps there. And it's a problem position for Bama. I mean, all five of the sacks allowed last week were from the left tackle position between both of those players. And when we're talking about Tennessee's pass rush, that's not a good omen for Alabama's offense. So there's going to be a lot of onus on offensive coordinator Tommy Reese to try to put a tight end on that side, try to put a running back on that side, chip as much as they can to support those left tackles.
So, Kennington, what have been your thoughts on Jalen Milroe's season to this point? I mean, obviously, you know, the Texas game comes, and then they try to go in a different direction at quarterback after that. It does not go well, and now Jalen Milroe has been the starter. I think has responded in what I've seen relatively well since then. Overall, what do you make of the way that Jalen Milroe has played?
Yeah, I think he's played well, all things considered. I think you're right. The situation where he loses his job and regains it, that could have been a turning point both for him in his personal career at Bama and Alabama season. But he's kind of risen to the occasion, and I think the team has rallied around him. The ironic part with Jalen Milroe is he has a case for best deep ball passer in the country. When you look at his statistics and what he's done with balls 20 yards down the field in the air, but in the short to intermediate game, that's where all four of his interceptions are coming from, and that's kind of where you see the inconsistencies in his mechanics and his accuracy. So if he can, you know, develop a little bit more in the short to intermediate game, keep improving in the deep ball passing, then you have the skeleton of a high-level starter. He's obviously really explosive with his legs. So he is kind of a microcosm of Alabama's offense, which is boom or bust, right? You have these kind of incompletions or, you know, these slow-developing plays in the short to intermediate, and then all of a sudden there's an 80-yard touchdown over the top. So he is an explosive player, and he's brought that dynamic to Alabama's offense. I think the key for him and the offense is developing a little bit more consistency, 15 yards and in, to become that balanced offense that they want.
So last year, 52-49 in Knoxville. I mean, this is going to be like we're watching a different sport, you know, compared to that. But you know, Bama obviously struggled with what Tennessee was doing, giving up the deep shots. I mean, everything was working for Tennessee. But obviously now this Vols offense struggles to pass, but they run it really well. Excellent backs. The scheme makes it tough, you know, because you kind of have a natural light box. But what about just Alabama's defense against that scheme? Obviously Dallas Turner is fantastic. I mean, these, like you said earlier, Kenny, I mean, these are two of the best, you know, pass rushing teams in the country. What about just Alabama stopping the run? And has there been any talk this week, even looking back to last year in terms of scheme? And I know it's a new D coordinator too, but scheme and kind of adjusting to that better than they did last year.
Yeah, I think for Alabama, the key for them defensively and what players talked about the most and what they remembered last year was missed assignments, blown coverages, miscommunications. Those things against the Tennessee offense is kind of a kiss of death. I mean, if you're not in the right spots, especially against the run, where you're talking about those wide splits at receivers, and it's almost one-on-one, you know, the five linemen and the tight end, whoever's in Tennessee's backfield and Alabama's, you know, linebackers and defensive linemen, if you're out of position one way or another, that's likely going to lead to an explosive game. So I think for Alabama, getting the communication right, filling the correct gaps, that's where they're really looking back to last year's game and telling themselves, okay, we really beat ourselves by not putting ourselves in the right position. It does help that they played South Florida, who has Tennessee's offensive coordinator from last year. If not the same scheme exactly, and clearly not the same caliber of athlete, but they have seen that kind of wide split before. And South Florida was able to successfully run the ball on them as well. So I know going back and looking at that film has helped them as well. But Alabama's defensive line has been one of the bigger surprises on the team in a good way, and they've been steadily ascending over the last few weeks. So I think that there's confidence within that group that they'll be able to hold their blocks and allow the linebackers to make those plays in space.
What's the feeling around this game, even really around this team for the fan base? Because we were talking about it earlier. I mean, both these teams have – I mean, Alabama, a better one, but both these teams with a win in this game have a, you know, path to the playoff. But obviously also Alabama not used to losing to Tennessee – I imagine there's – I mean, that's got to be fueling this a little bit. What's the feeling just about the importance of this game? And also, I know I'm asking you like three questions at once. Has there been talk about, you know, this rivalry potentially ending if the SEC doesn't go to nine games?
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of talk of the rivalry. There has been a good amount of talk about cigars and just kind of, you know, players' memories of that. And we talked to a lot of kids who grew up in the state of Alabama this week and talking about, you know, their view of the rivalry and everything. So there's been a little bit of talk about that. I think in regards to how the fan base is feeling about this game and Alabama's chances moving forward, I would just say it's cautious optimism, because you see flashes of Alabama and you see those stretches of dominance, but they've yet to put together four quarters in a game against formidable competition. And that Arkansas game last week leaves reason for a little bit of anxiety, because Alabama was fully in control of that game. And in the second half, they lost focus and they allowed Arkansas to come back and make it a close game. And this Alabama team is extremely talented, but the consistency isn't quite there. And when that element isn't there and you allow teams opportunities to come back, eventually it's going to come back and hurt you. And Alabama has tough games the rest of the way. They have Tennessee. They have LSU after that, after the bye week. They're going to Kentucky a week after LSU. And then obviously they end with the Iron Bowl. So there are landmines on their schedule, and the non-dominance for four quarters is going to lend themselves to playing into some close games. So for the fans, when you think about, you know, left tackle being a concern and maybe giving up a sack that turns into a fumble or penalties or not playing consistency, all of those things could end up hurting Alabama down the stretch. And they're hopeful, and I think, like I said, there is optimism that Alabama is going to be able to kind of run the table and get to Atlanta and play for SEC championship and potentially a playoff berth. But it's going to be a week-to-week thing. I think for Tennessee, Brock Bowers' injury opens up a huge opportunity for that program. They, with a win against Alabama, are going to be in position to play Missouri, and then they get Georgia in Knoxville, and that's the only road game that Georgia has to play, kind of the stretch where Brock Bowers is going to be out. So really big opportunity for both teams, and, you know, you are correct. Whoever wins is going to position themselves nicely when those first playoff rankings come out.
Well, Kennington, we really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Looking forward to the game tomorrow, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Absolutely. You as well. Kennington Smith covers Alabama for The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We will do that next. Make sure you tune in to 94.9 The Fan tomorrow at 7 o'clock for our college football game of the week, Utah taking on USC, presented by Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for scenic views of all the hottest college football games across the country and home of the 29-degree beer. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
This is so frustrating.
What the hell is wrong with people?
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day.
There it is. The victors. Hail to the victors. I'm going to talk a little bit about Michigan football today. And Michigan and Michigan State football, because they play Saturday.
They do.
And let me start off with this. Michigan's going to win by about 40.
Make sure you catch the punt.
Be good. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Michigan's going to have to botch about 17 punts, and they probably won't punt in this game, so that'll be tough. But, man, what is going on with Jim Harbaugh?
I don't know.
Yo, it's wild because
he's got his khaki still. That's good.
So, for anybody who hasn't seen this story yet, it hit yesterday. And the NCAA is investigating Michigan for, Pete Thamel got some stuff here. And Mark Schlabaugh, an elaborate scouting scheme, okay? So, first of all, I think some people would be surprised. You know, the scouting in person at games, this has been prohibited for almost 30 years now, since 94. And really, the decision to do it is sort of it really was communicated as like a resources thing. Like, basically, you know, this is an NFL thing to do, but, you know, some schools can't do it. So that was one of those measures through the years that are like, oh, yeah, let's have a level playing field, even though there's absolutely no way you'll ever have that. But Michigan's being investigated. And remember, Harbaugh already took on a suspension because of allegedly lying to investigators and recruiting stuff during COVID, right?
Yes, he was cutting his grass, apparently, when Michigan was playing games earlier this year.
Yes. And so now, like, the sign-stealing thing, and again, stealing signs, I mean, apparently a lot of teams are worried about a lot of other teams stealing signs, right? I mean, you got four different people giving signals, and apparently, I mean, everybody thinks everybody else is stealing their signs. I assume then you're trying to steal the other team's signs?
I guess so.
So
why not?
This is not, you know, this is not a new idea, stealing signs, but this is pretty wild. The person of interest, this is according to this ESPN story,
always a good start.
Yeah, yeah. Is this okay? This guy named Stallions. Let me get the name here. Connor Stallions, a football analyst, retired captain in the U.S. Marine Corps. Okay, so he's been with the program since early 22. Now, if you remember Michigan, I'll go back 2 years ago, Michigan State, one of the best games I've ever seen. Michigan State beats Michigan. Kenneth Walker has in a crazy game. And at that point, Harbaugh really hadn't done anything. He had a losing record the year before. The Michigan fans I was tailgating with that day, get out of here, Jimmy. He had taken a pay cut. Get out of here, Jimmy. Since then, they have been incredible. They've been the best program. They won it, but they have been the best program in the Big Ten. They've been dominant. This guy, and I'm not saying that Connor Stallions, I want to make sure I have that right, Connor Stallions, I'm not saying he's the reason, but it is funny that he came on shortly after that. And so apparently, like, this guy is, like, doing high-tech, like, Mission Impossible spying missions for Michigan. It's just, this is incredible. So he's in the recruiting area, but a source told ESPN, quote, he had one role, okay? And this is, like he's got his computer is going to be taken. A source said this, quote, this is worse than both the Astros and Patriots. It's both use of technology for a competitive advantage, and there's allegations they're filming prior games, not just in-game. If it was just an in-game situation, that's different. Going and filming somewhere you're not supposed to, it's illegal. This guy on his LinkedIn account, his bio, Connor Stallions, says he will, quote, employ Marine Corps philosophies and tactics into the sport of football regarding strategies and staffing, recruiting, scouting, intelligence, planning, and more.
That's good.
This is amazing.
First off, that can't be his real name, right? There's no way his real name is Connor Stallions.
Yeah, and it sounds a little bit too much like, you know, films that you wouldn't want to be in. this is wild. I have no idea where this is going. I mean, when it comes down to it, like stealing signals and stuff like that. But it is another example of kind of Harbaugh kind of living on the margins a little bit. I mean, at some point, and the funny thing is, like, I go back to those Michigan fans who, again, were like, get him out of here. All this. Like, if this stuff had happened before they started winning big a couple years ago, there's no question. Oh, my God, go away.
Yeah.
Now, you are defending him to the absolute end of the earth, right? But that's how it works.
Yeah.
If you're winning, yeah, man, no, this is BS. This is garbage. I can't imagine this is going to be a big deal, except you do have to combine the fact that he's got this other thing going on.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? I mean, the NCAA just gave Kansas nothing for FBI, like, you know, surveillance that clearly showed extensive cheating. So I feel like none of this stuff leads to anything. But I got to say, man, this is pretty shady stuff from Harbaugh.
I'm just trying to imagine this Connor Stallions guy, like, with his binoculars deep into the bushes, watching Ohio State's practice over there with the signals, like, trying to figure out what they're calling. Like, I remember, you remember when they were building, like, those apartment complexes, like, across the pond from the Titans practice facility?
Yeah, right.
And all the Titans fans are like, well, just keep an eye on the leasing agreements over there. Make sure Belichick doesn't have a room. So he's over there, you know, in a prone position on the balcony watching Vrabel practice over there. It's good stuff. I mean, hey, employing some military strategy to get a competitive advantage. Like somebody rappelling in or jumping out of a plane.
I'd love to know, man. I mean, I'm looking forward to more information on this about Connor Stallions and his tactics.
Yeah, what's he doing?
But another part of this. So,
is he in a ghillie suit out there?
So the Big Ten called Michigan State, told them all this stuff, and then Michigan State actually said at first they were maybe not going to play the game because of the safety of the student athletes. I was like, that's a good way to get out of a 40-point beating right there.
Yeah,
they did decide they'll play. So this probably just makes Michigan's kids even more angry to blow them out. But, yeah, the Harbaugh thing, man, it's a little – I think he's a heck of a coach. He has proved himself without question. They got it rolling, but, man, he's on the margins big time.
Hey, I will say, they've been
you
a lot.
You win, and that's okay.
Well, they've been a whole lot better the last 2 years than they were prior to that. A lot more big wins for Jim Harbaugh.
I hope Connor Stallions has gotten some raises. I mean, Ryan Day right now is like, oh, that's the only reason we lost to them. Ohio against everybody. One more thing on Michigan
State. Needs to do a little bit better job spying on Georgia and TCU, apparently.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, those would have really been blowouts.
Yes.
TCU turned out not to be blowout. But I will say one more thing on Michigan State. They're not doing, you know, the student football game, which makes me sad. I don't want to be the old person who's like, you kids, you need to, you know, carry
Why
on the
tradition.
Why
are they not doing it?
Oh, you didn't see all this stuff?
No.
Oh, we don't have time to get into it. Basically, like, the Michigan State kids or like, it's gotten too nasty and stuff, which is sad to me because, like, we talked a lot of trash to the Michigan kids, and then some of them became really good friends of mine as we, you know, got older and got into the business.
So
the
Michigan State kids are going soft is what you're saying.
Pretty much. Okay. And the thing is, look, I said this before. Michigan staff, their paper has like 150 people, and Michigan State's has like 30.
Right.
And so, like, you're not going to win. It's just like a different class of high school playing like the lowest class. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's all a bunch of nerds, but like you have three or four kids who are athletes against one, me, with a cigarette in my mouth, you know, you're probably going to lose. But so what? I wish they would keep playing and like have some good sportsmanship and like, you know, let's just make this rant about so many different things. And I'm watching these idiot drunks beating the crap out of each other at football games.
Yes.
I mean,
well, this is going all over the place.
Sport. I know.
We need Connor Stallions. Get in there and stop these people from fighting at the football game.
Exactly. We need Connor Stallions to do security and football games. End of rant.
This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexo. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD. We'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.